Hello, my name is Jessica Key, staff writer with the Indianapolis Recorder newspaper and Indiana Minority Business Magazine. And when I want to stay informed, I always listen to Afternoons with Amos on AM 1310, The Life.
All right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310, it's Afternoons with Amos. Stand for Children has become potentially a issue in the IPS school board race. And before I bring on Justin Ohlmiller, who is the executive director of Stand for Children, we just got something in for the governor's office, and I know Justin is going to be interested in hearing this as well as all of you. We talked earlier with State Senator Gene Breaux about the state's decision not to apply for a federal grant that could have been up to $80 million. To expand and augment preschool, quality preschool here in the state of Indiana. The governor has sent out an extensive statement, explaining his decision. And among what the governor said, quote, "Our administration recently decided not to seek federal funding that would have required us to expand our pre-K pilot before it is even up and running. It's important to note that many early learning programs across the country have not been successful over the years. On behalf of the children the pilot is designed to serve, it is imperative that Indiana get this right. Indiana's program is based on parental choice and includes the flexibility and accountability needed to ensure children are in programs that get real results. It is important not to allow the lure of federal grant dollars to define our state's missions and programs. More federal dollars do not necessarily equal success, especially when those dollars come with requirements and conditions that will not help and may even hinder running a successful program of our own making. An important part of our pre-K pilot is the requirement that we study the program so we understand what works and what doesn't. I do not believe it is wise policy to expand our pre-K pilot before we have a chance to study and learn from the program. While accepting federal grant dollars can at times be justified to advance our state's objectives, when it comes to early childhood education, I believe Indiana must develop our own pre-K program without federal intrusion. Our pilot program will give Hoosiers the opportunity to assist some of our most vulnerable children while we examine the merits of quality pre-K education. Generous, thoughtful, careful developments of new policies for our most disadvantaged kids is the Indiana way." The words of Governor Mike Pence. Justin Ohlmiller is the executive director of Stand for Children. He's on our live line. Justin, your reaction to the governor's statement that was sent out literally 11 minutes ago.
Amos, good to have me on. Thank you so much. And I've not read the full statement. Actually, I just heard about it through your reading of it. So I can tell you, we'll be looking for details in that statement. Sounds like there's a little bit more detail than what we got yesterday, but our reaction yesterday was one of sort of shock and being very troubled. We had some good momentum heading into the pilot year for early childhood education. Obviously, from our standpoint, we believe there needs to be a substantial investment made in early childhood education across the state. Between 30 and 40,000 kids, vulnerable, low-income children, don't have access to quality pre-K in our state. That absolutely is wrong and needs to change, and we think that the federal grant could have been a huge boost in helping build capacity in Indiana to provide those opportunities for children, vulnerable children who need quality earlier child education. So we were troubled certainly by the decision. And I would also add that a lot of good people have spent a lot of time over the last several months. We've been tracking this, but there's been a lot of good people that have been putting their efforts and their blood, sweat, and tears into this federal grant, and so it is a bit shocking that it was such a late decision that was being made, given that there was a green light given months ago to the grant. And so, we definitely want more detail as to why this decision was made, because the need is out there for sure, and it's something we've got to tackle if we're going to provide those opportunities for our children across the state.
Like I said, I didn't know this was coming. All of a sudden, it popped in my inbox, and then here you come. And I said, well, let me get your reaction to that. Justin Ohlmiller, Stand for Children seems to be becoming a part of or maybe one of the issues in the IPS school board race. First of all, for listeners that aren't familiar, what is Stand for Children?
Sure. We are an organization. We have a C3 leadership center that is a partner with IPS, and we do a lot of intensive education in our IPS schools. Amos, you were kind enough to have us on a few months ago and feature some of our parents that have gone through our Stand University for Parents program, which is a six-week curriculum that provides parents with the tools and capacity to be able to be champions for their kids' education, to understand they are their first teacher at home for their children. It teaches the ability to build partnerships with principals and teachers. It also talks about how to have a great parent-teacher conference and make sure that parents understand how their school is doing and also how their child is doing at school when it comes to that continuum of early child education all the way through hopefully college and career. And so it's a great program that spends a lot of time with parents in our most challenged IPS schools, giving them the skills and confidence and know-how to be educated and informed champions for their own child's education. That's on our C3 side. And then on our C4 organization, Stand for Children, we do a lot of advocacy work, and this is where we have a state legislative program. We were supportive of HEA 1321, which has been a topic with our school board candidates. We were very supportive of that legislation. We will also come forward with another legislative package this coming legislative cycle. We really work to advocate for programs that help our children get prepared for college and career down the line. So we have two separate organizations that we run under the umbrella of Stand for Children.
How many states does Stand for Children have affiliates in?
11 states.
11 states. In those states where local school boards are elected, does Stand for Children support candidates that are on school board ballots in those states?
It depends on the state. So the great thing about this organization, the reason why I took this job in February of last year, is because in my role, I have a lot of control and autonomy in terms of what we decide to do. What are the best issues to take on? What is the strategy to help our parents become more informed and engaged in this effort to improve our schools? And then we can develop that strategy based on the input of stakeholders and parents specific to Indianapolis and specific to Indiana. And so, in our case, we have chosen to help elect education champions at this IPS school board. But other affiliates choose their strategy based on their own community's needs and stakeholder input. So some affiliates have gotten involved in school board races, and others have chosen not to get involved in school board races.
Is this, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the second IPS school board election that Stand for Children has endorsed candidates for, or is this the first?
This is the second, yes. In 2012, there was an endorsement process that was run before I took the executive director role.
Any reason, given that there are 10 other school corporations in Marion County, all of which are having elections, why Stand for Children is not involved in evaluating and endorsing candidates in the other school districts?
Sure. It comes down to capacity and funding, Amos. So I get this question a lot, why are you focused on IPS? Well, number one, there's definitely need in IPS, for sure. I mean, we know the results. We've seen the data. Despite the fact that, IPS's student population has shrunk over the last several years, now it's actually starting to come back up. They are still one of the largest school corporations in the state, and certainly we see IPS as the front door for public education for our city. People are making decisions about whether they come to Indianapolis and stay in Indianapolis based on the education that we're offering in IPS. What I can say is, but you're also correct, I think, Amos, when I've heard you talk about the results we're getting in some of our township schools. There's a need for positive improvement in schools across Marion County, and certainly if I had the budget and the capacity to be involved in school boards and other townships, we certainly would be, again, based on the need and based on the opportunity to help impact, the positive, hopefully the positive future of our kids in those communities. So right now it just comes down to budget and capacity, and we've been involved with IPS since the affiliate began, and there's still a lot of more work to do.
So evidently there was some confusion from your point of view on the program on Wednesday when the at-large candidates were here, maybe confusion in my mind between the Chamber of Commerce's endorsements of three candidates, which were done before the ballot was locked, and you're indicating that your endorsement process did not begin until the filing deadline came, which was the end of July, as I remember it.
That's correct, yeah. And again, Amos, what I would like to say too is you've done a great job of bringing candidates from all the districts on. Every single candidate, come one, come all. Our process was also open. We waited to endorse until after the filing deadline. So we had a survey that was sent to all of the candidates who had filed. And so 7 of the 10 chose to be part of that endorsement process. For those that did not, I know Mr. Batts said he did not hear from us. We actually sent a certified letter to Mr. Batts, as well as tried to contact him, I believe, by phone as well. He didn't have an email on his filing, on his filing application. So we really tried to make sure that our process was open, and we're really pleased that 7 of the 10 candidates across the board did decide to participate in the process, including Annie Roof and Dr. Hampton, who are recently on the show as well.
We're talking with Justin Ohlmiller, the executive director of Stand for Children. So I get this email from a listener earlier today that was all upset about your role, not you personally, but Stand for Children's role.
Sure.
And they were saying Stand for Children is spending $1 million in the IP. I'm serious. In the IPS school board race, I've had people, stop me or call me up and concerned about all of this direct mail that is hitting their mailbox. And today was the deadline. 12 noon was the deadline for campaign finance report. So what is on your report?
Well, what is on our PAC report is not a whole lot of change, actually, compared to what the last PAC report was.
The last PAC report that I saw was from April on the state's database that said y'all only had $2,000.
Well, it'll report a little bit more than that, but Amos, we're as you know, we are running an independent campaign, which means that we're using our C4 advocacy arm to help elect and support the election of education champions. So that is an independent campaign that is not being run through our PAC. Generally, PACs are coordinated efforts, which means they can coordinate with the candidate and candidate committee. But in our case, we are not coordinating with the candidates.
So where is your campaign finance? Today's the 17th. The deadline was noon. I'm still looking for it. Do you not have to file a campaign finance disclosure?
All the requirements and laws around C4 disclosure we are following, but it is not the same as the requirements for political action committees.
So when will the public know how much is being spent on behalf of the three candidates that you're supporting, Lanier Echols, Kelly Bentley, and Marianne Sullivan?
Well, we have an annual report. We have reports we have to file based on our nonprofit schedule with both the federal government as well as the state. And those reporting deadlines, I believe, are after the election. I'll need to get the exact dates in terms of when those reports are.
But are you, Justin, are you concerned that because this information is now not going to be known by the community, that people that are out there that are saying that Stand for Children is buying the IPS school board election, that hundreds of thousands of dollars are being spent, it sounds like you don't want to use the opportunity of public disclosure to debunk those rumors before the election? I understand if you've got a deadline as a C4, C5, C20, B17, B613 or whatever, I understand those deadlines might be the end of the year, but there are people out in the community that honest to God believes the Stand for Children is spending a outrageous sum of money buying school board seats. And what I'm hearing you say right now is, even though every other candidate is releasing their finances today, you guys got a different set of rules you follow, and you don't want to voluntarily release it now before the election. If I'm hearing you wrong, please tell me.
What I'm saying is, as you know, there are candidates across campaigns across the board, be they federal or state, what have you, There are independent expenditure campaigns that are run. President Obama was elected with the help of an independent expenditure campaign. There are campaigns that are run where there are independent organizations that decide to seek funding to support the election of those candidates and invest in their leadership and invest to educate voters about the positions that those candidates have taken. And so we're simply utilizing our CE4 in the same way that other C4s and other organizations have been used to support the election of candidates across both political parties.
But you do recognize that many in my community view independent expenditures and these independent companies, whether they are the Koch brothers, whether they're some of these right-wing folks, whether they're the Daily Kos on the progressive side, or that other rich guy on the progressive side that gives a lot of money, that though these organizations do not have a savory reputation, whether they're on the right and on the left, because of the secrecy involved. If we're talking about our children, and we're talking about all of these rumors that are there. Let me ask a sidebar on this. There are people that are saying, wait a minute, if Stanford Children are sending out all of these mailers independently and that the candidates involved have nothing to do with the mailers, then how did they get pictures of the candidates with cute children sitting next to them if the candidate wasn't involved?
Sure. We had an event where after we endorsed the candidates, we invited our membership base, our parent membership base, to meet the candidates that were endorsed and have interaction with them and get to ask them questions about their policy positions, get to know them. We want to make sure that those pictures are from that event that we had with the candidates several weeks ago. So, one of the opportunities that we provide him is you talked about, sort of the Stan being an outside organization. In fact, we're investing in getting people in IPS, parents in IPS, quite frankly, to be involved in school board elections in a way that never has happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them a place at the table to ask school board candidates questions, giving the opportunity to support the election of these candidates. Unfortunately, as you know, Amos, too many times in the past, people go down the ballot and they see the school board in their respective community, and it comes down to the name they like best or a coin flip of who they're going to vote for. Some people just don't vote because they don't know. And our belief is the profile of these races needs to be increased.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is one of the most important positions we can elect in our community. And so we believe strongly in making sure that we are involving people in the election of these candidates. And if the profile is raised and if candidates believe that the bar has changed in terms of being able to run a competitive race, to us, we think that's a positive thing because we need to make sure that we are getting top-flight leaders on our school board because these are decisions that are going to be made that are going to impact the future of our kids.
But I want to go back to two other things that relate to the dollars and cents. Two of the candidates that you're supporting have been around Indianapolis for a number of years, Marianne Sullivan and Kelly Bentley. I've started to skim their campaign finance reports and their contributions. They've got a significant number of contributions from people here in Indianapolis, people here in the state of Indiana. Lanier Echols' campaign finance report that she filed late this morning indicates raising almost $17,000. $1,500 of it came from Indiana, the rest from out of state. By any objective standard, that's an abnormally large amount of out-of-state contributions, particularly for a candidate that the community did not know until all of a sudden they started to see her picture, in mailers coming in their mailbox as they Stand for Children and Lanier Echols. Do you all really understand the concern that is growing in the IPS district over the role of big money and not knowing the amount of big money is only going to fuel that concern?
I do understand, I do understand there's a concern there. And Amos, as you and I mean, when I took this role, you and I sat down and chatted because I wanted to figure out in the past, education reform, quote unquote, reform organizations have had a tradition, of unfortunately not adequately involving, a lot of the communities that they're actually trying to advocate on behalf of. And so we've taken that role very seriously. And that's why we invest a lot of money on the C3 side with our parent university. We are in the trenches working with parents every single day in IPS. And our parent university has become, quite frankly, a very short period of time, a landmark program that is helping define parent engagement in our community. So we're very proud of that fact. And at the same time, though, we understand that on our C4 side, we've got to do something to make sure that we're electing high-quality leaders on the board. And so absolutely we're going to be involved, and absolutely we're going to get our parents involved that want a high-quality education for their kids. When it comes to Lanier, I've not seen her finance report. Like I said, she's running her own campaign. We're doing things independent of her. What I can say is our parents decided to back Lanier because she's been an IPS school board, or she's been an IPS teacher for 3+ years. She's taught in some of the toughest IPS schools. She knows the kids in IPS. She's been an administrator as well. She understands what principals need and what teachers need to be able to succeed in teaching our kids. And so we think that that kind of experience is absolutely needed on the board.
That's why we're
advocating for her election.
And but I'm hoping that you understand that not knowing the donors to this effort by Stand for Children is going to raise questions, particularly when I'm looking at Lanier Echols' campaign finance report, and I see a donation from Cheryl Sandberg, the head of Facebook. Now, how in the Sam Hill is Cheryl Sandberg going to know about an African-American woman that's only been out of college 7 years in Indianapolis to make a donation? That's crazy.
But, Amos, isn't that a positive that a leader like Cheryl Sandberg is looking
Cheryl
at
investing
in a,
knows nothing
in a,
about
in a young African-American up-and-coming leader in our community?
Cheryl Sandberg knows nothing about Indianapolis other than we play the 49ers once every 2 years. That's all she knows. She would not know Lanier Echols if she ran over her with a Mack truck. And that's I think that is my point. The community wants to hear disclosure. They want to know, and I am just stunned that the rules of the game do not allow people to know how much Stand for Children has skin in this game. Because by not telling the community, the rumors are going to increase, and people are going to think that you've injected $5 million in the campaign.
That is absolutely just not accurate at all.
Then release the financial information like everybody else has done today.
We will have an annual report that comes out.
You can call it a preliminary annual report as of October the 10th. Everyone else did it. You're just standing on legalisms. There is nothing that prohibits you from doing it, is there? Is there a law that prohibits you from putting out a preliminary report of your finances as of October 10, 2014?
Well, what we're spending, Amos, on the campaign is part of the strategy, right? Of what we're doing. We've got a program that we're implementing to help elect our candidates that we're supporting, and
but every other campaign has shown their cards through the finance report. Obviously, when I talk to my legislative candidate friends over the next 2 weeks, as well as my congressional friends, maybe the law needs to be changed, not just for the Koch brothers and those on the liberal side, but this is crazy. But Justin, I love you anyway. With Stand for Children, if you want more information, the website is, I think it's stand.org. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll be back with the folks from City Mosaic. It's After News with Amos After These.